You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hypothetical.
Is there anybody alive out there? What
Hey, I'm Lee McCormick. This is Tramps Like Us, Bruce Springsteen podcast, episode 56, Women, Muses, and Tramps. For this episode, I'm joined by my friends Shanti and Lynx from the Muses and Stuff podcast. They have a great show focusing on the women in rock and roll, the fans, the artists, the groupies, the wives, the mothers. Check out their show at musesandstuff.ptbopodcasters.ca or on iTunes. So it's appropriate to discuss the women, the muses, and the tramps of Bruce Springsteen with Shanti and Lynx. But before we get into the episode, it's time to start hyping the Nashville Rockin' Pod 2 event happening August 25th. We had such a blast last year, mingling with the fans and podcasters and musicians. There was record and rock and roll memorabilia dealers, selling great collectibles, we had panels all day long, and a kick-ass jam session to close the evening with some rock and roll. So this is your chance to get on board with us this year. We want to see you at the event. If you can get to Nashville for that last weekend in August, do it. A $20 donation to the GoFundMe site gets you a ticket to the event. If you can't make it, we appreciate a donation, $5, $10, whatever you can do. There's a lot of overhead with putting on an event like this. We have to rent the venue, get insurance, pay for security, sound men. So no one's taking money in their pocket here. It's just to put on the event. And we're just supporting the podcast and stuff like that. If you're a podcast listener, please consider throwing a little green our way to show your support for all the free entertainment this podcast and others provide. You can find all the pertinent details, including some perks offered at NashvilleRockinPodExpo.com. You can purchase a ticket and send a donation at GoFundMe.com/RockinPod2018. When sending a donation, please include Tramps Like Us in your message to say that you're a supporter of this show. Thanks a lot. We really appreciate it. So here we go. Lynx and Shanti of the Muses and Stuff podcast. Two lovely ladies to discuss the lovely ladies of the boss.
Oh, the lovely ladies in the finery tonight. I wish that I could know them one by one. All the handsome gentlemen with loving on their minds, strolling in to take the ladies home.
All right, we're talking, we're recording here.
We're going recording, we're talking, and recording and talking.
Right, so this is a crossover episode, Meeting of the Minds, Muses and Stuff podcast meets Tramps Like Us, Bruce Springsteen podcast.
It sounds so good. I was thinking about what we would call it, and then of our episode just being called Tramps Like Us, and it's a
kind
podcast about,
it fits a little bit, right?
You know,
yeah,
about like ladies and relationships and music and sex sometimes.
Yeah, it all fits together.
So that is an excellent podcast name, by the way.
Tramps Like Us?
Excellent.
Well, it's not really original. You know, I had to link it to the Springsteen somehow. So.
No, it's perfect.
Yeah, it works, right?
It's perfect. Yeah.
All right, so we should introduce each other. I'm here, Lee McCormick, obviously, and I'm here with Shanti and Lynx from the Muses and Stuff podcast.
We want to hear about you.
Oh, so, okay, well, so what do you want to know? What should we talk about first?
Well, I mean, I'm okay with talking about me first, just so everybody knows. Like, okay, he did ask first.
Ladies first.
Ladies first.
Tell us about yourself, Shanti.
Okay. So our podcast is about legendary music muses or super groupies, the woman, the wife, the girlfriend, the muse, or any backstage movers and shakers who have contributed to rock and roll history but might not have necessarily gotten their due.
Yes.
Credit, yes.
Their credit.
Yeah.
There should be a wing at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, like a side wing.
Oh, wouldn't that be amazing?
Supporters,
we're
right?
We're trying to like make that wing.
Enablers.
Find all the information there. And yeah, it's been great. We've been doing this for like a year and a half now. Longer for you.
Yeah, we've got like 65 official episodes, and then we have interviews. So we have interviews and episodes. The episodes are like on Yoko Ono, Patty Boyd, Bobby Brown that we were talking about.
Yeah, Cherry Pie Girl, yes.
Yeah, yep. That's right. So I think that's people are like, Bobby Brown, like the, yeah, Cherry Pie Girl.
Yeah.
And Rita Ray Rocks and, you know, maybe women that you've heard of before and ones that you haven't heard of before. So
Andy I listened last August, you guys did an Elvis feature and you talked about all Elvis's chicks. Priscilla and Ginger, Linda Thompson.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good one.
We actually
and Marg Rock.
Yeah, we haven't done Linda yet, but we can.
Oh, you did?
Yeah,
okay.
There's, I mean, that's the
we
beauty
did
of it.
And Margaret was the third one that we did.
Right, yeah.
But Linda, yeah, we definitely have to get her in there.
She's my favorite out of all Elvis's girls. And
well, so, yeah, my dad, too.
For sure.
And Margaret!
To be your fool no more. Cried and cried till my eyes are sore. I gave you all the love I had. Still you tried to be fair. I love you, but I ain't gonna be your fool. I'm sick tired of all your cheating and lying. I'm gonna find myself a boy to keep my heart from crying. Used to say about there was yesterday. I'm gonna change my ways. Now it's my turn to play. I'm gonna find me somebody new. I think I'm pressing you now. Ain't gonna be your fool no more. Cried and cried and tear my eyes are so. What you done wrong. You're gonna wake up in the morning, baby, I'll be gone. Each and every day of the week, I can't eat my dinner and I can't sleep. I love you, but I ain't gonna be your. I love you, but I ain't gonna be your. I love you, but I ain't gonna be your fool.
And then our interviews are like anybody from Denise Donlin to Sash Jordan.
Oh, yeah, cool.
The latest one.
Yeah, Maureen Van Zandt.
You nice. You have heard of her?
Maureen Van Zandt. Yeah, she's linked to the Bruce Springsteen universe, right?
She was amazing. We are so excited that that is going to be out now. And
she's been linked to the Bruce Springsteen world for over 36 years, because that's how long she's been married to little Steven for. Yeah.
Wow.
It's one of the most successful marriages I can think of.
Mm-hmm.
Let alone in rock and roll.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. So she was amazing. She gave us some fantastic stories about hanging out with Jimi Hendrix and Janis Joplin.
Wow.
And how she
and
got in.
Brown?
Yeah. Yeah.
She has a good story there.
So that'll be the latest episode. So
she was back in all that scene, like, even before she was hanging around Steven and all that stuff. Anyway.
And that was so cool, too, because we tried to find more information about her online to, like, do an episode about her. Couldn't really find that much. We thought, let's just write her, and she was up for it. And, yeah, we learned so much that I have never previously heard of before. So it was really exciting and so cool that she was – you know, back in that scene before. Of course she was, you know. It was good.
Awesome, yeah. Well, I'm going to check that one out. When was that? When does that one come out there?
It comes out in 2 days. So
okay.
By the time this episode comes out, it will be out.
That
but
will
it
be
actually
out.
Is not released yet.
Cool. All right. Well, we'll be listening for that.
Great. Okay. Now
tell us
about
trips
we're
like that.
All right. What do you want to know? My turn.
Okay. When okay, if you have a podcast solely dedicated to Bruce Springsteen, might we say that you have an obsession?
I wouldn't say obsession. I like Bruce Springsteen a hell of a lot. I love Bruce Springsteen. He's one of my favorite artists. I love a lot of music, a lot of musicians, a lot of different artists and music. And, you know, I got into this podcast thing as a listener about 5-6 years ago. And all these shows I would listen to, I wanted to give some input back on it because I'm like, I know just as much as these guys talking, right? So I was like, I got to do a podcast. And I thought, what's a topic I could do? Something like that, right? And I went to see Springsteen on the River Tour, and I was just blown away. And I wanted to do something like, maybe I'll do a Springsteen podcast, because there weren't that many. You know, and Springsteen lends himself to have a lot of topics and a lot of things you can talk about. And, you know, a huge career and tons of music and different styles and a rabid fan base that would listen to stuff like that, right? So I figured this would be the way to get in and do a podcast, right? So I picked Springsteen to do it, even though I could do an Elvis podcast or
maybe,
you know,
in the future.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Any guesses from anybody in the room? If I were to do a podcast solely on one musician, okay, Links already knows who it is. Mm-hmm. But would you have any idea?
Could I guess Tom Petty? Possibly. Yes. Yeah.
Bingo.
Yeah, I could.
That would be mine if I had to do one podcast on one musician. I could talk and go forever.
I'm really excited. Should be a lot of fun.
I could do that too. Yeah, Tom Petty's one of my favorites. So. Yeah, you just want to find, like, artists that kind of lend themselves to, you know, a vast, you know, material to talk about and discuss. And the one thing I thought was that maybe, you know, after doing a Springsteen podcast, I would get sick of listening to Bruce Springsteen music and I'm going to kill all these songs that I love. But no, just the opposite. I'm actually, like, way into it now.
That's so awesome. Yeah. And it was funny because you said earlier, like, you haven't run out of any material doing like weekly episodes and stuff, and like neither have you, and you have just the one topic.
Yeah,
that's so awesome. Not many people would think you could, you know, go on about Bruce Springsteen that much, but
we're up to about like 56 episodes now, and we've only done about 4 album reviews, so there's still like 14, 15 albums to go. You know, there's so much great stuff
just
to talk
about.
Goes
on forever.
Yeah.
Awesome. What's your favorite album?
In general, or Springsteen album?
Springsteen
album.
Yeah.
Well, I have a soft spot for Born in the USA.
Yeah,
I was 10 when that came out, and it was just huge, and I just really grabbed a hold of that record and played it for like a year straight. So
I was listening to that on the way here, actually.
Yeah, it holds up. You know, it's very commercial. There's a lot of pop songs on it, but it holds up. I love it. It's got a good vibe to that record.
Holds up just like Bruce and Patty's love.
Ooh, good segue.
Do you have a favorite Springsteen?
Yeah, 1978, Muscles on Muscles. You meant like just like the time of his life, right? But I found him the most attractive.
That's exactly what I meant. Yeah.
Prove It All Night Long, Bruce Springsteen, 1978.
When he's
era.
Like really thin and muscular, and
he's a good looking man.
He still looks good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Still got it.
I'm secure enough to say he's a good-looking man. I could admit that.
Yeah, well, you're a good-looking man yourself. It takes more than no one.
Yes, yes. I was accused of being his brother when I was at. I went to meet him there at Indigo Books when he did his signing there. So I was one of the lucky 600, and I got my picture taken with him there. And one of the girls was like, "You look like his brother. You look just like his brother up there."
Amazing. Yeah, I can see that. Aww, we missed that.
Yeah, I remember when it happened too. I found out too late.
How did you?
That was a tough ticket to get.
How? Yeah, it's. I mean, that's always a question, right? Yeah. And that's one thing that we deal with big time with our podcast is how. How did you get backstage? How did you meet the rock star? How did you do? So a lot of the times we give, we give tips and tricks of the trade.
This was just a luck of the draw, like on the computer trying to get a ticket. I was at work when they went on sale, so I had a friend on a floor below. She was trying to get tickets for me. I had two computers going trying to get tickets. But the thing that got it was I downloaded like this Eventbrite app to my phone, right? And I had that going as well. And it had all five, like I got through on the Eventbrite app. So thanks
Modern
to that app,
technology.
Yep, that's how I got the ticket.
That's good. I don't have that. I need to get that.
Yeah, so now I'm stuck with this Eventbrite thing on my phone I can't get rid of. But it was worth it for that moment, you know? Yeah.
You got to be ready for next time.
I'm going to be ready.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny because I've developed obsessions with people through doing the podcast. Like, I kind of hate to admit it, but my roommate was a bigger Dylan fan than I was when we were in university, and I couldn't really understand her, like, attraction and love and, like, the emotions that she felt deeply for him, and that really changed for me in the last couple of years.
Interesting. Do you have, like, a song of Bruce's or an album that you didn't particularly love, but through discussing it, it's become a greater...
That's a good question. It's hard to say because I just love everything, right? I'm almost too biased, like, you know, like everything. But Tunnel of Love was one that, I've always liked it. But, as I've been delving into this podcast and really getting into that record, that one's really strong record, I think, for me. That's one I've always said that when I heard it as a young teenager, I didn't really get it. But as I got older, it really started speaking to me, that record. Right?
Yeah, it's definitely got, like, so much emotional baggage just splayed out. And you have to live life a little bit before you relate to it, for sure.
Absolutely.
So, really, it was through researching for this episode that I learned a lot. So I've always been a fan. I'd say more of a casual fan. I got my first Bruce Springsteen album when I was living in Halifax like 5 years ago, Darkness on the Edge of Town.
Oh, that's a good one to start with.
Yeah, so actually it was a gift from my boyfriend at the time. And he gave that to me. I gave him his gift. And because he was the huge Springsteen fan.
Yeah.
So for me, the gift was the record. And then him was a snow globe with the picture of Bruce from Darkness on the Edge of Town, because I really like that photo of him. So we kind of opened them at about the same time.
No.
And it was the same.
That's
kind
so
of
sweet.
Yeah.
It's very sweet.
Yeah.
It's like young rock and roll love.
Yeah, it was cute. And like my boyfriend at the time, he actually kind of looked like young Bruce Springsteen, that whole muscles on muscles look. So
muscles on muscles, eh?
Type.
That's your type, I think.
Well, you just flexed.
It's good to know. Note to self.
So, speaking with about the book and the research, we just want to give a shout out to our research assistant.
Yeah, Lisa Towns.
Behind the scenes.
Yeah, she really helped us out. Tons of material. We read the books. We got lots of amazing stuff to tell. And yeah, thank you so much, Lisa.
So, Lisa resides in Santa Cruz, but also considers Boston home. And she says that she's a diehard Deadhead.
Oh, not at all. Not at all.
Is it being sarcastic? No, you're being
serious? I'm being dead serious. Yeah, I'm dead serious.
Oh.
I'm not Lisa.
Well, I'm with you, Lisa, and I support you. Anyways, thanks a lot.
Yeah,
we
thanks,
really,
Lisa.
Really appreciate it, and can't wait to work with you later. Yep. So, like I was saying, I learned a lot from this book, and I think I now have an obsession, and I'm okay to call obsession. I get obsessed with things.
Mm-hmm. I was exactly the same. I knew about him, and of course, the records, and I didn't realize, like, how amazing the book was going to be.
Yeah, yeah,
it's like become one of my favorite memoirs ever. It blew me away.
That's awesome. From like not a very big Springsteen fan either. Like I've heard a lot of reviews from the Springsteen fans that love it, right? But yeah. It's cool to hear just like a regular person checking out his life.
I swear, even if you don't like his music, like the material is there. You're gonna get something out of it. It blew me away. It's hard to
That's a great review.
It. Yeah.
Lisa was saying that she actually read the audiobook and Bruce reads it himself.
Yeah, I still need to get that. That's great.
Yeah, because she said hearing it in his own voice was extra special. Same thing like when Pamela DeBar reads her I'm with the Band. Have you read I'm with the Band, Confessions of a Groupie?
No, I need to read that one.
You know what? Listen to it. If you prefer to listen to audiobooks, listen to it too, because then she'll stop and she'll add in little things here and there.
Yeah.
And it's seriously been like it's one of the always it makes the list of the top rock and roll memoirs of all times. Like she's always in there with the boys. And she's really legendary, and she is still doing so many fantastic things for so many women. Like she's such a feminist, and she just she's so inspiring to us. And it's a hell of a rock and roll read.
Is it? Yeah.
And she's friends with Maureen.
Yeah, we didn't even mention that. That we didn't mention it to Maureen because we didn't know. And after, when we were telling Pamela, we talked to. I don't even know how it came up. Anyways, Pamela said, "Did you drop my name?" And it's. Like the one time
that we didn't that drop
we
her
didn't
name,
drop Pamela DeBar's name, and
of course they are like women coming together, amazing women, of course.
In the name of rock and roll, yeah.
Outside the church bell's toll for this wasteland we call home, there's nowhere left to hide or run to. Daddy drank red.
Very much about love. The why we got together was because we wanted to talk about Bruce Springsteen and the women.
Yeah, the women in his life.
Yeah.
And then I guess the main woman in his life for the last 34 years, right?
Right. So I think maybe we went in with it with the intention of we're just going to talk about Bruce and Patty. And then I started reading the book and I went, well, this whole book is about love.
Yeah.
And he's had so many amazing women in his life that certainly helped shape who he is.
Absolutely, yeah.
And that's a big thing with our podcast. We've done rock and roll moms before.
Right.
We've done, I don't think we've done sisters, have we?
Not yet.
Siblings.
Siblings, yeah. But, you know, the rock and roll support system, family, sisters, mothers, wives, like I've said.
Well, he's a big mama's boy. Bruce's a big mama's boy.
Well, that's it. That's it. Exactly.
Like the one thing too, you'll notice there a lot of rock stars are mama's boys, and they have like they've had like clashes with the daddy, right? Like Elvis was like that. Elvis mama's boy, like
Tom Petty,
Jim Morrison,
Bono
too. Yeah, Bono had like fights with his dad. Like it's just a thing with that, you know.
That's so interesting. Yeah. It leads to great music.
Sure does. Yeah, Italian mama's boy said, shy, soft-hearted dreamer. And then it was his grandmother that actually really started taking care of him because she almost kind of like stole him away in a sense from his parents because she had lost a child. And then the next child that came was Bruce. And so it's where he said he really got his like... He got that spirit of, I'm not listening. I'm not listening to nobody because he had the run of the house.
Yeah.
With his grandmother, he could do anything that he wanted. And she just showered him with attention. So
Italian grandma. Nona? Nona? Nana?
How to say grandmother in Italian? Nonna. Grandmother. Nonna. grandmother, nonna. Now you try.
Nonna?
Yeah. He said he was a lost boy king. And he always got his way with his grandmother, and that he was in a matriarchal household. He says they allowed the men the illusion of thinking that they were in command, but the most superficial observation would tell you that they couldn't keep up. The Irishmen needed mama.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it was a family of Italian women and Irish men together.
That's right. And foreshadowing, we're skipping ahead a bit, but Patty is the opposite. Isn't Patty like... Her father's Italian and her mother's Irish, mm-hmm. right?
Exactly. His grandmother's death was very hard on him. He said, tears, grief weren't enough. I wanted death. I needed to join her. Mm-hmm. So he really like felt this sense of loss from a really early age, which would eventually come to haunt a lot of his relationships. He saw the world as a fraud. And the thing that saved him were his little sister and his new interest in music.
All right.
Yeah.
Sister Virginia.
Mm-hmm. So when Virginia was 17 years old, she became pregnant, but people didn't notice until she was 6 months along. He says of her, she had soul, intelligence, humor, and beauty. And when it came time to have the baby, she worked at a Kmart. She like worked her ass off. And she became a muse to Bruce when he wrote The River.
I come from down in the valley. Where Mr. when you're young, they bring you up to do like your daddy done. Me and Mary, we met in high school when she was just 17. We drive out of this valley down to where the fields were green. We go down to the river, and into the river we dive. Oh, down to the river we ride.
That's right, and that's one in the situation in that song is just, you know, directly about his little sister. And, you know, they're still married together. His little sister and that, the story, they're still together to this day, which is kind of... Kind of neat, right?
Yeah, she kind of lives the life that he always writes about.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
His mother was a legal secretary, and he loved going to work with her, and I think it's obvious why.
Seeing all the business ladies looking good with their purses and high-heel shoes.
Yeah, so his visits, exactly, would start at the receptionist area, and from there, he says he got permission to walk the aisles to his mother. He says... The perfumes, the crisp white blouses, whispering skirts and stockings of the secretaries coming out of their cubicles to greet me as I stand exactly breast high, feigning innocence while being hugged and kissed upon my crown. I walk this gauntlet of pure pleasure until I end up back at my mother's desk in a perfumed trance.
Poetry, man.
Oh,
yeah.
So descriptive.
So I just really thought it was fun to start talking about how he started, you know, like the sexual awakening, the relationship with the women, mm-hmm. and then, yeah. His mother was a child of divorce, abandonment, and prison, but she stuck with her family and worked hard staying with his father throughout his mental illness. Another thing, his father being his father's mental illness, that would come to haunt his relationship with women.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And he mentions that, like many times, that if it hadn't been for his mother sticking with his father, that the father would have either died or like ended up in the streets. And when Bruce was 18 years old, his father decided to up and move out west, and the mother just like his mother decided to join him. So his mother loved people and love, and his father was cynical and disliked people. And then when Bruce was 18, he felt like he and his sister had been kind of abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't know at the time that he had a mental illness.
His father, yeah. They weren't aware of the severity yet,
did
right?
anybody really talk about mental
yeah,
illness back then
yeah.
at all? Like, I don't think so. His father resented his family for what his life could have been, always saying that he could have done this or should have taken that job. So Bruce saw a lot of his father complaining, drinking, smoking.
Mm-hmm.
But it was actually his mother that got him his first electric guitar. encouraged his music and supported his early creative writing.
Absolutely. Who's that song, The Wish, that he wrote specifically about that moment? You know, his mom buying him that guitar. It's so sweet. Yeah.
Dirty old street, all slushed up in the rain and snow. Little boy and his mom standing outside a rundown music store window. On top of a Christmas tree shines one beautiful star. And lying underneath, brand new Japanese guitar. I remember in the morning, Ma, hearing your alarm clock ring. I'd listen to you getting ready for work. The sound of your makeup case on the sink. And the ladies at the office all lipstick, perfume, and rustling skirts. How proud and happy you always look coming home from work. If Pa's eyes were a window to a world so deadly and true, you couldn't stop me from looking, but you kept me from crawling through. It's a funny old world, Ma, where little boys' wishes come true. I got a few left in my pocket, and a special one just for you. It ain't no phone call on Sunday, no flowers or a Mother's Day card. It ain't no house on the hill with a garden and a nice little yard. I got my hot rod down on Bond Street. I'm older, but you'll know me in a glance. We'll find us a little rock and roll bar. Baby, we'll go out and dance. Now, one of my favorite things about this point in my work life is I get to look out into the audience and I see fathers with their sons, and I see moms and grandmoms and little girls, little sisters. Yes, you sang very good the other night. We get people all ages. And that was something I think that my mom taught me when she was very young. She loved rock music. She loved rock and roll. And her enthusiasm and passion for it rolled over. So we're just glad to have you all coming out, all the different generations. And somewhere out there is the future of rock and roll. It was me and my Beatle boots, you and pink curlers and matted or pants. Getting up off the couch to do the twist for my uncles and aunts. I got a girl on now, Mom. Pop the question on your birthday. Told me to get out there and say what it was that I had to say. Last night we all sat around laughing about the things that that guitar bought us. I laid awake thinking about the other things it brought us. So tonight I'm taking requests here in the kitchen. This one's for you. I'm gonna come right out and say, but if you're looking for a sad song, well, I ain't gonna play. Oh,
Bruce had his first kiss up in the shadowy bleachers and learned how to dance and would dance in public because girls love to dance.
It's true.
So you smart. Exactly. So you can kind of picture. It's like when you kind of realize early that dancing gets the girls and guitars get the girls. Yep. So you learn how to dance and you buy a guitar.
Yeah, he planned that one out pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's kind of like, he knew that if you're playing a show, once you got the girls dancing, everybody was happy and everybody would dance.
Absolutely.
So the first girlfriend he talks about is on the day that he graduated high school, and instead of attending the ceremony, got a bus to New York, wandered around the village and Washington Square Park, eating pizza and then making this new girlfriend. He ended up going back home, bringing her with him, where she was promptly put back on a bus and sent back to New York.
Hey, bus driver, keep the change. Bless your children, give them names. Don't trust men who walk with canes. Drink this and in a week you'll have wings on your feet. Broadway Mary, Joan Fontaine. Advertiser on the downtown train. Christmas crier, bustin' cane. He's in love again. Well, dock workers' dreams mixed with Panther schemes to someday own the rodeo. At the Late Show.
At around the same time that Bruce met Clarence Clemons, he met a girl. He says, during this time, I fell in obsession with a lovely surfer girl, a drug-taking, hell-raising wild child who played by nobody's rules. She was a perfect antidote to the control freak in me and opened up my hunger for every blonde, perfect thing I never had. She was so alive, funny, and broken, I couldn't resist her. She stirred up my Catholic school bred messianic, how do you pronounce that? Messianic complex.
Big then, word.
It's a big word. Thank you for helping. Then did the bone and heart-crushing dance over it that it deserved. And so she had a small child. He kind of played daddy to this child. And he even ended up giving, like, the last thing that he had from his childhood, which was this little rocking horse, to the mom and her little daughter. And he said that he would see them years later, both beautiful as ever.
Wow.
He was always had that sort of family man in him, I guess, even when he was playing the field.
Yeah. Surfing the coast.
So speaking of playing the field, at around the time he was introduced to Clive Davis and signed to Columbia Records, he had two girls that he was kind of seeing.
As you do. When you're hunting down record deals in New York City.
Yeah. So one of the girls, he says, like, would tip him eating money from time to time. And another one owned her own business and drove a fancy sports car. And he would mention later that he was always kind of like this, you know, that he was kind of a serial monogamist. But there was a don't ask, don't tell. There was a little bit of, yeah. His relationships would never last more than 2 years at a time, to the point where his own mother would call him out on it, like, oh, it's about that time.
Mm-hmm. Well, we all know his true love was his music, right? So that's the thing. All these years, he's battling, like, he's getting in these bands and he's playing in these bars and he's, you know, he loves girls, but he loves his guitar too.
Sure. And that's in, you know, he says, when I was on the road, it's kind of contradictory because it's always like the music and the girls and the music and it gets the girls. And then I went out and I was flirting with the girls, but then
it was a vicious circle.
But then he's always also kind of like, but I was there to work. I wasn't there to party.
That is true, though. Like, the other guys
work and then party.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that he was really back and forth with the concept of, like, you know, I love having the girl, but he wanted to be on the road. But then it goes, as we know, really, really deep. And, you know, as our listeners are going to come to find out, that he had a lot of things inside of him stirring up since he was very young that was a direct result of what happened with his family and his father, mm-hmm. that made it very difficult for him to maintain a relationship any longer than 2 years.
He always seemed to have a hard time balancing that. Like, is this family life that he wanted to achieve, that he saw like his own family having, and that's what he wanted for himself, and mixing that with this career that he's, you know, just trying to.
He was a very nervous child. Like, he had a lot of, and he eventually would, you know, come out to talk about his depression, but he was very anxious and nervous as a child, up to the point where he blinked so much that
other kids
would call him Blinky.
Yeah.
Right? Back to the girlfriend who had a condo looking over Asbury Park. Did I say that right?
Asbury? Yeah.
Asbury Park, that's it, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes I say things like Greenwich Village. I don't know how to say words like mez and
messianic.
But I have friends like you to help me, so.
Right.
So he says back there, he says that they would engage in what I'm sure was some of the worst sex of our lives, if such exists. She held all of the aces, which I didn't mind, and we had a nice semi-screwed up relationship for a while. And then that's pretty much it, but I was like, I wish I had details. Like, why was kind of semi-screwed up? What?
Probably just the same way all of his relationships were.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Plus, it's all one-sided, too. It's from his point of view, right? We need her book. What happened, man?
Yeah. That's kind of, that's our forte there, is we find those women, we figure out.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, so.
He doesn't name drop, though. Never gives no names. He just girlfriends. Yeah. And he has all these songs with all these girls' names in it, right? And I'm like, which one is this one about?
Yeah. Interesting. By the time he was 22, he had never had a drink because of the way he saw his father act. You know, when he was drinking. But to kind of calm that hamster wheel monkey mind, he did eventually start drinking. But he said that, you know, he was prone to foolish behavior and the occasional sexual misadventure, but mostly he was just kind of a happy drunk.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, he would, you know, get on with the ladies. And I could just picture him, you know, he says, like, he would get drunk and he would dance. And he would just flirt with women, waitresses, girls at the bar.
He was having the time of his life. He's in his 20s. He's a musician.
Yeah.
That's the way it should be.
Yeah.
Yeah, life, the party. I think he even says the words groping and flirting with anyone in sight until the next day he'd wake up with the alcohol regrets.
Morning after.
Who hasn't? Yeah. I have like no boundaries. Once I hit a certain point of drinking, I'm already so open and like, let's touch lips. And then and that's before I'm drinking. And then afterwards, it's just like, woo.
Note to self.
We're all drinking water and tea for good reason. Yeah.
It's a school night.
We have work to do.
He talks about what it's like to perform for people, how the gathering of souls kind of blows those blues away. And he talks really poetically about bringing people together, and then also having jokes about, you know, and if the pure high of the rush of the rock and roll, and I'm paraphrasing here, of looking down to the audience, like if that didn't get your blues away, then the good-looking women in the audience would. So he's always making jokes like that. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Where he leaves off Thunder Road is what he says is the beginning of the next tour. For 4 decades, he would ask the question, I want to know if love is real. So he left behind his adolescent view of love and freedom and entered into a more complicated world where Born to Run would be the dividing line.
Right.
Yeah.
Each record kind of being a new period in his life, right?
Sure.
And the characters in his song kind of, you know, representing that, you know, that era in his life.
Exactly. Yeah.
Brilliant.
When Bruce got the cover of both Time and Newsweek, he says he remembers Steven handing it to him and madly grinning. And when he saw this, he thought, stardom, the impact, the hits, the fame, the money, the women, the recognition, and the freedom to live how I please.
Let me in. I wanna be your friend. I wanna guard your dreams and visions. Go wrap your legs around these velvet rims. Strap your hands, cross my engines. Together we could break this trap. We'll run till we drop. Maybe we'll never go back. I wanna know if love is wild, we don't wanna.
Well, that's right. He was like, what, getting there? Or was he big by the time that those two articles?
Yeah, but that was the release of Born to Run, 75, okay. So he was just huge. That's when it all exploded, kind of
okay.
thing.
So around this time, he was renting a farmhouse. He was driving a truck, which his girlfriend at the time, we don't know her name, but we know the name of the truck, and she called it Super Truck. he said he'd drive it down to the Stone Pony and flirt with the waitresses, or he'd head to the drive-in with his date. And imagine this. Imagine being on a date with Bruce Springsteen. Okay. He'd fashioned a half couch, hibachi grill, and a cooler with ice in the back.
Oh,
where
my
they'd
God.
Grill up some burgers and watch a movie.
At the drive-in? What a man.
Like, into
like
it.
The most, like, American date ever.
Some burgers. New Jersey summer night.
Y'all.
Yeah, the Super Truck.
Which one was that? That was Sherry, probably. Sherry, darling. Oh. Well, who knows, right? I made a list, eh? I made a list.
Oh, you didn't.
Yeah. Just off the top of my head today, I was thinking like all the women in Bruce's yeah. songs, like names of these songs. So just,
good one.
Yeah, so just off the top of my head, okay, I got Mary, Wendy, Janie, Sandy.
Shanti.
Kitty, Rosalita, Sloppy Sue. Sloppy Sue's in there. Yeah. Candy, Sherry, Puerto Rican Jane, of course. Maria, Leah, Frankie, Cynthia. And I have Bobby Jean in brackets, and I have Terry in brackets, because Bobby Jean could possibly be a guy.
Yeah.
You know that song?
But, so could Terry.
Yeah, it's kind of written about Steven, yeah. but it could also like be about a girl, too,
it
that song.
Be,
yeah. And then in Backstreets, there's Terry. So Terry's, I think, is his buddy, but, you know, Terry could be a girl, too.
And Leah's my middle name.
Lee's a good name, yeah. Lee's a great name.
Wait, Lee or Leah? I know your name is Lee.
Yeah,
but
are you
is the
Leah?
Girl Lee or
well,
Leah?
It's L E A H. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's
Leah.
Yeah, that'd be me.
Yeah, that's off "Devils in Dust." Leah. Mm. Yeah, it's a recent one. Yeah.
I like how Bruce described himself as a manic depressive trapeze artist.
Mm.
Wow. Yeah, so you can imagine that it would be difficult for him to maintain any kind of healthy relationships. He said that his writing is emotionally autobiographical, and I believe it's about darkness on the edge of town that he says, along with Catholicism, in my family's neighborhood experience, I found my other Genesis piece, the beginning of my song, home, roots, blood, community, responsibility, stay hard, stay hungry, stay alive, sweetened by cars, girls, and fortune. These are yeah. the things that guided my musical journey.
Excellent.
So good.
I love the cars and girls portion of that. Yeah. That's my favorite, but it's all good.
Yeah. I'd love to think that these are real names of women out there, and yeah. they're just like so excited when that song came out.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get to the problem, though. Let's get to the issues that he was facing. And I mean, I don't even want to say it was a problem because it's his journey. It's how he got to where he was. And
he made the choice,
man. Patty. He made the choices. I mean, he does, we're getting ahead of ourselves, but he does say that he wished he would have, you know, he hurt some people along the way. But anyways, he used his music and touring to hide and run from himself and, you know, for lack of a better word, running from his demons. Now, he would eventually find therapy and stick with the same doctor for years, but before he really knew what was inside of him and why, it left him with a lot of questions, in particular about his relationship with girls. So, relationships and love made him believe that these things just weren't for him, because ultimately, when he became close with someone, his anger, fear, and depression reared its head, and instead of facing it, he said it was easier to just roll. Which I came to believe is meaning, like, just leave and move on.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I'd routinely and roughly failed perfectly good women over and over again. After 2 years, and there's no more hiding behind anything, like, he'd be gone, right? And they'd be gone. And he says that he had many lovely girlfriends, and it wasn't them, but it was the emotions that they brought up.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, the implications of a life of commitment and family burdens. So that kind of scared him. Because his grandmother has died, his father was emotionally unavailable, and then they left. Like, he really didn't want to get close to anybody.
Wasn't ready yet, man. He's yeah. still, like, pursuing these other dreams in his life at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And this wasn't, the stars weren't lining up for him.
Yeah. He says, with the end of each affair, I'd feel a sad relief from the suffocating claustrophobia love had brought me, and I'd be free to be nothing again. I'd switch partners, hit rewind, and take it from the top, telling myself that this time it'd be different. Then it'd be all high times and laughs until fate and that unbearable anxiety came knocking and it'd be one more for the road. I loved as best as I could, but I hurt some people I really cared about along the way. I didn't have a clue as to how to do anything else.
I love that you're so honest. I'm sure so many people can relate to this. You know.
Well, that's the thing. This is a book, right? Like, if you want it to be good, you got to be honest. You got to lay it out there. Like,
you can tell he's had many years of therapy too, just by the way he writes about it and how much introspection he's done.
Absolutely,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it became clear to him over the years. And if anybody's wondering if Bruce ever fooled around with the women at his shows or the girls at his shows, he does address this. And the answer is yes. Mostly, I think it was more so at first before the fame got bigger. Mm-hmm. He doesn't go into detail, but he does mention some nights ending in psychosexual carnage, laughs, ecstasy, and sweaty bliss. Then it's on to new faces and new towns.
Living the dream, eh?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
1970s.
Or like 2009, depending on who you are.
But Bruce living in the pre-AIDS world and like sex, drugs, and rock and roll and like, oh.
Freedom.
Yeah.
Shag carpeting and
yeah.
Quaaludes. Good times.
One of his houses had shag carpeting, I think he said. Yeah, and so he did describe himself as a serial monogamist and never looked too hard for company on the road. But like we said, for him, the road was work. He didn't want to have too much fun. And he seemed like more of a guy who needed a connection. He talked about the professional groupies and how he never wanted to be a notch on somebody's belt.
Mm. Yeah. Which is funny because a lot of these women were notches on his belt.
Hmm. Interesting way to look at it.
Yes.
Yeah. So when he was, you know, so sometimes like he'd partake in these, you know, one night stands or little relationships here and there on the road. But mostly he would just return back to his hotel room with fried chicken or what did he say? Fried chicken, French fries, TV, a book, then bed. Let the good times.
Well, that's the thing, too. Most of the guys in his band were partying and he kind of had to rein it in because he was the leader. He was in charge. He was the role model. He had to write the songs for the next record still, right? So
yeah. So I guess he needed to remember and stay sharp. So he never, as far as I know, didn't take drugs. I think he just couldn't let go of the sense of control.
He's the boss. He's got to be the boss.
That's right. He's got to be in control at all times. Can't relinquish control.
Yeah. And the only time he felt like that freedom and that release was when he was on stage. Yeah.
Absolutely. He loved so much. He loves, cared and respected the stage so much that was his, you know, he wasn't going to let anything get in the way with it. And he was a guy that was, you know, he had a lot of talent. And he just worked really hard, and once he made it, he was not going to, you know, let that go to drugs or any kind of thing.
So speaking of that, with the song Hungry Heart, he says, we had a hit, a real one. Hungry Heart went to top 10, doubled our album sales, and brought to our live shows women. Now I'd had a hardcore following of young men who made up a high percentage of our live audience, but Hungry Heart brought in the girls and proved Top 40 Radio's power to transform your audience.
Yep. A very happy song about a guy leaving his family.
Um, So let's talk about the idea of home a little bit. After the River Tour, Bruce returned to New Jersey and had been looking for a home of his own. He wanted a permanent house and saw every single house you could imagine. Big house, too big. Small house, too small. Too new. You know, you get the idea. He says, I came to see that no home built by man was going to hold slash satisfy the Jersey devil.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. I turned the minutes of decision into full-blown identity issues. What car? What shirt? What house? What girl? So he was, you know, the idea of getting a home for him was really difficult. He never really saw a study home as a place for him. That was more for regular people. Yeah. You know, he talks about the people that are, like, working the 9-to-5s. He had this freedom. He's like, so his heart belonged to the highway, something like that. Right, guys?
That's right.
All of these very internal issues came to the surface when he was 32, broke up with his very lovely 20-year-old girlfriend, and bought a cottage in the Hollywood Hills. And it was here that, you know, on the way there, that he'd really have a kind of anxiety attack. Do you remember the part of the book where his friend's traveling with him and is holding the teddy bear? And he's like, at first pissed off that his buddy's got this teddy bear. And then after a while, when it got to the trunk, he was like, I want the teddy bear.
Yeah. I must have skipped over that part.
Yeah. Bruce well, his go teddy back bear. And listen to the audiobook, right?
Okay, yeah.
That'll be fine.
I need to hear that.
I even do that. Yeah. Oh, you know what I just thought of? You know what? I think, like, my dad would enjoy that as an audiobook.
My dad's reading it right now.
Is he reading the book?
Yeah.
Okay, I think my dad would more enjoy the audiobook.
Yeah.
Okay, our dads are our biggest fans.
Oh, yeah? Do they listen to the show?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. Well, yeah. Hi, dads.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they tune in every week, and my mom's just like, good for you, honey.
All right.
So Bruce would winter in California, then head back to New Jersey. He got himself a doctor who he stuck with for the next 25 years. He said, with him, I slowly acquired the skills that would eventually lead to a life of my own. That was still many tears, mistakes, heartbreaks away, and often remains a struggle to this day. In Doc Meyer's office, I got a head start on my new odyssey. His knowledge guided me to the strength and freedom I needed to love things and be loved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's right.
So at 34, he wanted something with someone that was more serious. He wanted to get married. He was going to make it last more than 2 years. It was his mission. So he was still doing this fine line between never really being monogamous.
He's at that age. He's like early 30s, right? Like he's starting to...
He had been questioning whether or not there was such thing as a semi-monogamous system. There is, by the way. And generally, you know, like we said, partook in a don't ask, don't tell. But this time he was ready to commit. And so when he was in Los Angeles, he met Julianne Phillips.
All right. Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. So when he was in Los Angeles, he met Julianne Phillips. He describes her as 24, tall, blonde, educated, talented, a beautiful and charming young woman. We hit it off and began seeing each other regularly.
Total package.
Total package. Yeah. So 6 months into dating, he proposed when he was on his balcony in Laurel Canyon. And they were married in Oregon.
So at this point, too, you got to think Bruce is at the peak of his, like, popularity, like, Born in the USA. This is, like, he's on a worldwide tour. He's playing sold-out shows. He's on radio. Like, it's...
And that's why he's with the 24, tall, blonde, educated, talented, charming model. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm just saying, like, he's living that life. Like, he's just living... He's in this glamour lifestyle all of a sudden, right? Like, he's just being propelled to the Mecca.
And I guess the only thing missing was that family setup.
Yeah, so, the girl on his arm or whatever, I don't know. Yeah.
He's got the car, he's got the home, he's got the girl. Yeah. Now it's like, yeah. So he was determined this time to do it. However,
yes,
the past is going to come back again and it's going to get him hard.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, man. But let me just keep going to Julianne a little bit. Okay, let's give her a little bit of a...
Yeah, give her some dude.
She didn't get, you know, she didn't even get a huge, I find, she didn't get a huge time in the book.
I think you wanted to be respectful.
Yeah. So she was born in May of 1960 and was raised in Chicago. She began modeling in Manhattan in 1980 and was making up to like $2,000 a day. So she appeared in a few music videos, including Bruce's Glory Days, and was signed by Elite Modeling Agency. So she's just like right at the end in the cameo. And I had posted...
They're playing baseball and she goes to pick him up.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were... What would you say, Shawnee? You made that great analogy.
The three loves of his life. His life all appear in the video. Julianne, Patty, and Steven.
Yeah.
It's a great video.
Yeah,
and so
video.
I think her most famous role was on the show Sisters.
So I know her from the movie Skin Deep. Did you ever see the movie Skin Deep?
No. Have you?
No.
It's got John Ritter in it.
It's good?
It's pretty good. It's a Blake Edwards comedy. There's a very funny... What's that?
Is it sexy?
It's pretty sexy.
Skin Deep sounds like a sexy
Yeah,
movie.
there's a very funny sword fighting scene with two guys wearing glow-in-the-dark condoms, which is kind of funny. That's high recommend. Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Yeah, sexy. That when I think, that's what I think.
Yeah, for sure.
Little pads that I've attached to your problem areas will make your muscles contract. The more I increase the current, the more your muscles will contract.
Molly.
For the first silly treatment, it's not advisable like C+3. God, I wish I didn't hate you so much, Zach.
Come on, Molly.
After 10 silly treatments, you should be able to handle +7.
Mom.
Why did you have to act like such a dick?
Mom.
Anything above +7... could be dangerous.
The two of them honeymooned in Hawaii and set up house in his cottage. He said he already knew he wouldn't make it past 2 years. Pretty early on, his flaws would be revealed, and as is the pattern, he'd split. He went on faith with her. He wanted to find the resources to make it work. Mm-hmm. But as we know, he suffered from anxiety attacks. He tried to hide them from her. He worked with his doctor, but he was suffering from paranoid delusions, which we know is what his father, his father was dealing with. And it's what he called shades of my pop. Right?
There's that heavy scene in the book where he kind of takes his wedding ring off for the first time. And,
exactly.
And it freaks him out. It's kind of freaks him out, right? He's just like, I can't believe I'm doing this. But you know.
Yeah. Yeah, she was like laying in bed beside
him.
Yeah. And it's during these paranoid bouts that he made himself believe that Julianne was using him to further her career, which he says nothing could have been farther from the truth. Julianne loved me and didn't have an exploitive or malicious bone in her body. Inside, I knew that, but I was out where the buses... I've messed up my notes. Anyways, so inside I knew that. I was sliding back toward the chasm where rage, fear, distrust, insecurity, and a family patented misogyny made war with my better angels.
That's right.
Yeah, so pretty big stuff. He didn't want to scare her. So, and you're in a relationship, right? And then all of a sudden you get to a point in the relationship where it's like, oh, we're really getting to know each other now, and like the laughs, the good times, like it's they've kind of worn off, and now you need to find out who I am, and I need to find out who you are. And once somebody finds that out, then they're gonna leave. You know, like it's something that I think everybody can kind of relate to in like long term and serious relationships. And he didn't want to scare her, but he kept her at a distance when he should have been letting her in.
That's right. Well, hopefully he'll learn better for the next time around.
Yeah. Over the years, he says, I had come to the realization that there was a part of me, a carelessness and emotional cruelty, that sought to reap damage and harvest shame, that wanted to wound and hurt and make sure those loved me paid for it. It was all straight out of the old man's playbook. My father led us to believe he despised us for loving him, would punish us for it, and he did.
Well, I think Bruce got his heart broken a bunch of times too, like in the past, and you know, you carry that with you. You don't want to get your heart broken like that again. Reminds me of there's a version of the song Backstreets that he was doing, like in between Born in the USA and Darkness on the Edge of Town. He took a couple years off because he was having management problems, and he wasn't recording in that period, but he was touring, and he was doing Backstreets, and he would do this extended part in the middle where he would do this like sad eyes kind of section and do some love lyrics, and he would talk about, there was and a few shows he would talk about this girl that did something to him, right? And he would be like, you said you were going to love me forever, you said you, I meant something to you, and then he just breaks and he just starts going, you lied, you lied, you lied, and it's just so heavy and passionate, it's just Bruce screaming, you lied, at the top of his lungs. Oh, it's heavy. So, you know, I think he's carried some heartbreak with him over these years.
Wow, that's intense.
Yeah.
The back streets we take it. Taken outside of town. And I remember there was this old abandoned car all stripped down. I remember it stripped the wheels of the left interior, and on weekends we used to hitchhike out there, and we used to sit in the back seat. Yeah, baby in the backseat. Baby in the backseat. And I remember the night those kids set fire to that old abandoned farmhouse. And we could see it. We could see the flames rushing towards the sky across the fields. As we sat on the hood, we could see the flames rushing towards the sky across the fields. And I remember you told me. You said, baby, I shall always be yours. I will never let you go, baby. I will never let you go. And I remember watching the flames rushing towards the sky. And I remember us running across the fields, running through the fields, running past that big white house on the hill, running past them iron gates, running through them iron gates, running past that big white house that sat on the hill, running through the fields. I remember, and you said, baby, I shall never let you go. I swear I'll never let you go. And I remember waiting. I remember you were gonna quit your job, and I was gonna quit my job too. And I remember we were gonna go, and I remember standing in the rain. I remember waiting, standing in the rain. And I remember the rain came tumbling down. And I remember waiting. And I remember the rain came tumbling down. And I remember that you told me, I remember what you told me, and I remember you lied! You lied! You lied! You lied! Hard on the backs. On the back streets,
hiding on the big streets, hiding on the big streets, hiding on the big streets, hiding on the big streets, hiding on the big streets, hiding on the big streets, hiding on the big streets, hiding on the big streets, hiding on the big streets, hiding on the big streets, hiding on the big streets, hiding on the big streets, hiding on the big streets, hiding on the big streets.
Private person in a sense, and he definitely was when this relationship happened, and I think he was obviously grappling with that new found fame he had wanted for a while. He didn't get there overnight, as we know, but paparazzi started following him and Julianne, and he wasn't happy about that. When he was on stage, he wanted all eyes on him. He wanted the attention. When he was off, he didn't want anybody looking at him. So they either had to stay in their hotel room or they'd be followed and photographed. And, you know, maybe the paranoia was at the peak because, like you were saying, he's getting the most money. He mm-hmm. has the most hits. He's got the most fame that he has. And, yeah, like all eyes were on him and his relationship. So even, you know, when they had been, was it honeymooning or they had been? No, it was on a European tour. That their room had been photographed after they had left, the bed that they had slept in, even though it was made, it had been
him and Julianne. Yeah.
And like, this is where Bruce and Julianne.
Yeah, it's kind of weird,
and
right?
And he thought it was weird. It really it really turned him off, right? So Tunnel, ambivalence, love, and fear about his new life. It was finally not an album about the road, but about home. So Brilliant Disguise, he says, was an unexpected hit at the center of the album. It's about dropping the mask, and when you drop one mask, you find another behind it until you begin to doubt your own feelings about who you are. So I don't know if you guys know this. There's this guy named Lewis Howes. He's got this book called The Mask of Masculinity. And it's all of the masks that men can wear to hide themselves, to protect themselves, to, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty interesting. But
I have to get that book.
It was during this tour that Patty came to the front of the stage.
Yes.
In more ways than one.
I heard somebody call your name from underneath our willow. I saw something tucked in shame underneath your pillow. Well, I've tried so hard, baby, but I just can't see what a woman like you is doing with me. So tell me who I see when I look in your eyes. Is it you, baby, or just a brilliant disguise? I'm just alone.
stood at the altar. The gypsy swore our future was right. Come the wee wee hours, maybe, baby, the gypsy lied. So when you look at me, you better call and look twice. They said, me, baby, or just step away your disguise. Tonight I bet it's cold. I'm lost in the darkness of our love. God have mercy on the man who doubts what he's sure of.
That's going to do it for this episode, but we got more to go. Thanks to Shanti and Lynx for talking with me. They'll be back to continue this discussion, focusing on the First Lady of E Street, Patti Scalfa. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you next time.
So, that's the show, folks. Thanks for listening. You can find us on our website at trampslikeuspod.com, communicate with us on Facebook at our Tramps Like Us podcast group page, and on Twitter at TrampsLikeUsPod. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on iTunes, where you can leave a review and a 5-star rating. Tramps Like Us podcast is a non-profit audio fanzine created by fans for fans and is available for free. We are not affiliated with Bruce Springsteen or Columbia Sony Records. If you've heard any music you like, please find it and purchase it from brucespringsteen.net, iTunes, Amazon, your local record store, or wherever music is sold. As always, gratitude and respect to Bruce Springsteen and all past and current members of the heart-stopping, pants-dropping, hard-rocking, booty-shaking, earthquaking, love-making, Viagra-taking, history-making, testifying, death-defying, legendary E Street Band.
In Candy's room,
we lay in
Mary's dress way.
Reggae Philly in love.
I'm gonna sleep tonight in Maria's bed.
A sloppy soup,
Cynthia. No,
Sandy.
Puerto Rican change.
Ah, Frankie, my one.
I'm gonna be Candy's boy.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season 2 even more memorable together.